Hi, Robert.
Hey there. Welcome, everyone, to another exciting edition of Cambridge Inside Out. I'm Robert Winters.
Right, yeah, Judy Nathans, and it's election night? It's election month, as they have said. Yeah, it's been election.
Well, election year, you know, it's interesting. 4 years ago, I remember just saying, well, you know, we'll just have to wait this one out, you know, so I guess we've waited it out, you know. It's kind of amazing when the day actually comes.
Disappointing. It feels like yesterday, which is why people like us, well, people like me, Hillary supporters, are just so anxious. It's like,
you know, I'll confess that, you know, for the last few months, really, I've sort of been conditioning myself so that psychologically I'm not going to get myself too excited one way or the other with the outcomes, you know, because, you know, it is still a possibility that the election can go either way. You know, if anybody thinks it's absolutely all settled, it isn't.
No one does. Not like, I mean, we did last time because let's face it, except for like those 50,000 or whatever here and there, they didn't do their homework in some of the places. You know?
Exactly right. Yeah. And, you know, as we were just mentioning earlier, the thing is that, you know, I think so many people are so worked up and have become so worked up in so many ways, you know, on both sides of the political aisle. And and I think, you know, people are going to either be elated or upset. And, you know, in terms of trouble, I mean, as we were mentioning here, that the businesses in Boston are boarded up in anticipation, not necessarily of people going crazy because they're unhappy, but going crazy because they're happy.
Yeah, remember the Red Sox? I mean, somebody was killed.
That's exactly right. So, you know, it could be a long night. And the thing is, we also don't even know whether the election results will be settled by the end of the night. You know, the thing is, this could drag on.
But outcome could be if it's a higher margin. I really do think that's
right. I mean, I think in some respects the there is certain anticipation about how any late counted ballots would swing. So as long as the margins are acceptable even before that, I think then people can go to sleep tonight.
Those late counted ballots are mostly mail-in or absentee, and I don't think those are Republicans.
I think maybe typically not, though there may be some exceptions in some states, but I think typically not. In fact, I think that's kind of been the basis of some of this rather controversial election tactics where just setting the stage for legal challenges based on the most absurd premise of all, which is the notion that that unless a ballot was counted on election day, that somehow it shouldn't count.
Even though it was postmarked. Did you hear the latest? I saw this today on a breaking thing that some 300,000 votes weren't scanned properly at post offices, and now that's being challenged.
And the thing is, that could just be a glitch where they didn't, you know, the thing is that something might not be scanned, but still have been delivered. Ultimately, the real question is going to be when they actually check against the voter rolls and to see if there are many people who think they voted and then are told they never did. Because that is going to be
old at all. I mean, the thing is, you're right. Mail-in ballots do have information on them versus when you go in and vote and throw in that thing. That's pretty enough. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Checking these. So that in some ways, it's harder to discount those ballots.
Right. That's right.
The voters' information.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
I feel very hopeful, actually. I mean, I knew that, but now that I'm saying it, it's good.
Yeah, I mean, to me, this is, for me, unprecedented, the notion that, you know, one political party or a sitting president would actually be working overtime, filing lawsuits preemptively in many states simultaneously
Republican legislatures. It's all we've got to take over there's got to be a more balance in some of these states in terms of their legislatures, because they determine everything. Was it gerrymandering, whatever you want to say, all that, you know, it's crazy.
Right.
Democrats do it too. So.
Right. Right. Now, I think my understanding is in Eastern Standard Time, the first polls will actually close at 7 in a couple of states.
Actually, I mean, 7, that seems so reasonable. Although they may have had early voting in some of those states.
No, I think it's in places like Indiana and Kentucky.
No, Indiana, it's 6, I think.
I know, but that's 7 o'clock our time.
No. It was actually 6. I was out there 8 years ago for the primary.
No. 6 o'clock their time, but we're an hour later. That's all.
Right. Oh, so, yeah. But wait a minute. They said 7 o'clock Georgia. No, that's Eastern State.
Right. Yeah. So anyway, what I was doing, I was kind of keeping track which of the states were actually swing states and when they're going to come in, and a bunch of the big ones are all kind of coming together. 8 o'clock is kind of the witching hour when the polls close, but I don't think anybody reasonably thinks that there's going to be definitive results anytime soon after the election.
Florida has been able to count to tally ballots.
They've
been doing it, which is good, versus Michigan and some of these places that can't do it till election day, which is crazy.
I mean, there's multiple systems, and again, the states can do it their own ways. But I wish there was at least a little bit more uniform standards about this.
A federal election? Come on.
Well, the thing is like, for example, in Massachusetts, the Secretary of State's office had to make a ruling, and what they said was, I think for the primary, you could take the ballots out, basically unfold them, get them all ready to go, and then you could run them through the machine on election day.
Yeah.
Which is exactly what they did, and it went pretty smoothly. Okay. So they pretty much had all the results in by the end of the day, or the end of the night. Yeah. This time they actually took it a step further because of the anticipated greater number of ballots, which is they said what they could do is they could flatten out the ballots, and they could run them through the machines, but they couldn't tabulate it because you can't even, honestly, you have to go by the premise that you can't even trust an election official to keep mum's the word, to not put the word out there about what the scanner told.
You're
right?
So the state regulates the counties and towns?
Yes. It's still the elections division within the Secretary of State's office.
So at least there's some 51 rules rather than 200 or whatever. So there's...
Right, but the thing is that whenever any city and town board of registrars, elections officials proceed, they always have to get the okay from the Secretary of State's office. So, because it is a state and federal election.
Okay.
I think we have a little more latitude for the municipal elections, but even in the municipal elections, we can't just do the design. They set standards. So, for example, with our municipal elections, when there were part of the reason why they had to limit the number of choices to no fewer than 15 in 2018 that they were, though it didn't actually happen, they were anticipating having 30 or more candidates.
Right.
And then the Secretary of State's office has been consistently insistent that they allow 9 write-in lines, even though nobody ever uses more than one or two.
Right. Yeah.
So in other words, we couldn't just do what we wanted. We had to abide by the Secretary of State's advice on that.
Yeah.
And I think, and for state and federal elections, it's of course much more so.
Now that you're saying all this, it's interesting. In Massachusetts, I think we will have decisions tonight on the ranked choice, the ballot questions, because that's pretty straightforward, no?
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much yay or nay. And, I mean, and I'm pretty sure because of the way the early voting has worked here, they will pretty much have all of that tabulated in Massachusetts tonight.
Okay.
I think there's still provisional ballots, people who said, no, I swear I'm registered. No, you're not. No, I swear I am.
Yeah, right.
So they will have to do some adjudication in the days to come, but those are relatively few ballots. For presidential elections still, which is kind of makes it absurd to hear some of the what comes from the National Republican Party, who are concerned that you have to count the votes on election day or they're not valid.
It's not the way it's ever been done.
It has never been done that way. And furthermore, after the 2000 fiasco, the Help America Vote Act was passed. Right. And the Republicans, because they were concerned that it was going to be biased toward trying to get enfranchised more Democratic leaning voters.
Right.
So they said, the military will be with us. So it was the Republicans who insisted that in fact the overseas absentee ballots, they'd have to allow up to 10 days, as long as they were postmarked by election day, up to 10 days for them to arrive. And then that's why our elections are never official until the Friday after the Friday after election day.
How will the Republicans, are they, they're putting their foot in their mouth now about not winning?
They're completely contradicting their own existence.
It's like, you know, don't ever vote in election.
I mean, let's just doctor the rules basically to fit the situation. Absolutely. It's really pathetic.
I just hope they get kicked out on their ass. Excuse me.
Well, you know, my feeling about, you know, some people are making, I heard one thing was, at least someplace today, I read some editorial, somebody was in, no, actually it was Nancy Pelosi, was kind of bad-mouthing the new Supreme Court justice, but referring to her as an illegitimate justice. But the thing is, others were, people were saying, like, if there's anything election-related that she would have to recuse herself. And I'm thinking to myself, well, look, If a judge who was, you know, had potentially has a political bias must recuse themselves, then we're going to have nothing but 0-0 Supreme Court decisions. I mean, it's nonsensical. I mean, you got nine justices, you go with nine justices. I have a little bit of faith that judges, by and large, tend to defer toward enfranchisement.
I hope so.
And I think you even saw that in Texas where...
What about the Wisconsin thing? The first one they said they did not, they overturned it.
You know, the thing is though, it really depends upon what the state law says. So if a state law explicitly says something, then the justices can't just make up their own law.
I think you're right, except that, I don't know, you have the voting rights thing that got... in 2013 that said, oh, we don't need this voting rights law anymore. So
no, that's actually not what happens with the Voting Rights Act. What happens is that, because that's basically been, reactivated.
They didn't reactivate it because they didn't think it was an issue anymore.
Well, the thing is though, it works is that there were certain, it was like a list of states who were considered bad actors. Right. And there was right, there still are, but there was an understanding that just because you were a bad actor in 1963 or 1964, didn't mean you'd be a bad actor. After 20 years, you know, would some particular state still have to abide by the same standards, the pre-approvals?
But since then, so much has been put in place so many voter suppression rules have been put in place because they've had free reign.
That's true. So the thing is, I think there's some mistakes were made, but I still agree with the principle.
I see what you're saying. Okay, I'll give them that.
Yeah, I think now there's some evidence to say that, well, maybe some of those states are still bad actors, you know, so put them back on the list, requiring a pre-approval from the deputy attorney general for civil rights or something like that.
So should we some of these lead into some of what's been going on in our local government? Sort of, a little bit. No?
Local government, yeah. And actually, I think maybe I just want to say a couple of quick things.
About Richmond,
So there was a city council meeting, going quickly from national down to local. And I thought I'd just sort of mention, just briefly. So here we go. I hope everyone's seeing this.
Click on on his photo up there.
Yeah. So... someone who I've actually known for really over 30 years was Rich McKinnon, who was, a lot of people in more recent times think of him as one of the major property developers, but, you know, he worked with Mayor Vellucci. That's my first knowledge of Rich, was actually working, kind of assisting when Mayor Vellucci was mayor. And he was involved in so many projects. I mean, I won't go into all the details here, really. But what a decent guy, a great guy to know. And, everybody had stories. The city councilors last night were going one after another. I think 8 out of 9, basically, all the councilors who've lived here more than 2 years, basically, you all had wonderful things to say about Rich. So he passed away last week. I think the burial was today. Just a wonderful fellow.
He's young. I mean, younger than, he's my age. It's sad.
Yeah, it was pretty unexpected. There was another passing that somebody, maybe fewer people know, but one of the person who used to work with government relations in Harvard University was Marianne Jarvis. And I got to know her son, Rick Jarvis, when he was working for Cambridge Electric Light Company or Com Electric. I'm not sure what iteration of the utility name they were into then. And back when it ran, in the years 1990 to 92, I was helping organize these Earth Day events in Cambridge. And one year I got this bright idea that what we could do is we could actually have a, I think I'll come out of this here right now.
Yeah.
That we could actually, my idea was we would just have a big fest where we gave a lot of information about infrastructure, you know, water, sewer, recycling, electrical grid, and whatever. And Rick was great, you know, so he prepared all this wonderful stuff. And we had this whole big display down at Riverside Press Park. And what a wonderful guy. I think he later moved to Medford, and apparently he died. I learned that he'd passed away. But I learned that he, you know, he died suddenly, heart attack, just very recently. So pretty sad.
Was he related to? I remember Jarvis.
Of the coach.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're related, but it's possible.
Well, I remember that they talked about his family growing up in Cambridge and his mother worked.
I think
he'd be a brother or somehow a cousin.
It's very, very possible, if not probable. I just don't know. Yeah, I mean, there are certain prominent families, actually very prominent Black families who've been around for generations, and you hear their names popping up, you know, in multiple places, you know, it's very, very possible.
Yeah, I'll have to look at
pretty
that.
Sure. Anyway, very, very decent guy, you know. So, now there were some other things of note that were happening at City Council last night, one of which was... oh, by the way, I should just say, I'm not going to show charts and graphs here, but, you know, the governor has issued new guidelines.
Right.
I think they're voluntary, but I'm not sure about earlier closures in bars and restaurants and public places, a little stiffening of the mask requirements, or the, you know, even if only voluntary. And the reason is that the numbers have been going up. We're still doing reasonably well in Cambridge. I think it's largely elsewhere in the state that the problem is been accelerating. But, you know, when I look at the numbers in Cambridge residents, there has been a real uptick. It's a noticeable uptick. So it is definitely a cause for caution for Cambridge residents. So keep those masks handy, even after Halloween. And, you know.
Before indoor, I mean, it's been cold.
So, you know, people talk about this third wave as though it's somehow an inevitable thing. None of this has to be inevitable. It really is just a matter of there's expected practices.
But the bottom line is, Robert, we don't know about this particular strain of whatever it is. It's really frightening when I hear different stories about different outcomes. I mean, we really don't know.
I agree. But the thing is that it still causes, you still have to have transmission. And that happens.
Right. You have to really, really down on
it. It doesn't happen just because the clock says it's time to transmit.
No, of course.
It happens because I think there's certain aspects of human behavior that are predictable. Like people get fatigue and they say, well, I'm tired of wearing the mask, or I think it's okay to be doing this now. And
they're talking and they're hanging around with some friends. Even if it's 6 feet, if you're talking and laughing and you're not wearing your mask, that's transmission.
Yeah. Potentially so. Yeah, exactly. So so anyway, it's a cause for concern. I don't think it's a cause for alarm, but it is very much a cause for concern.
I mean, they're expanding now to 7 days a week testing for anybody. That's just wonderful.
That's right. No, I think we're doing the right things. It's good to have the resources. It's good to be in a place where we've got the Broad Institute and other research institutes that can sort of get energized to really help carry out some of this stuff. You know, so that's been pretty great.
Yeah.
So, now one of the things that I actually thought was kind of entertaining last night in a kind of a pathetic way at City Council meeting was that there was a, supposedly because of the economic revenue loss caused by COVID, is that the city manager came back with a proposal to increase the resident permit parking fee from the current $25 to $40.
This is in response to a policy order from a year and a half or 2 years ago, right?
Well, the thing is that there was policy orders a little while back that did lead to some step increases. So it went from, I don't remember, it was 15 to 20 to 20 to 25. And I don't know whether they had scheduled.
The increase has been 2013.
Right. But the thing is, I don't know whether they had actually scheduled in any increases beyond
five. No, right. I
think they went 15 to 20, 20 to 25. The manager made no bones about it, basically said flat out. It was, goes, well, we lost a lot of revenue and we needed to generate revenue.
Yeah, it's $500,000. It's not right. Nothing.
Yeah, and politically, I mean, nobody. I think it was only one reference to this last night. Is that, I mean, I happen to know that certain kinds of road, you know, money generated through resident permit parking fees or parking meters, all of that, there is under state law that you can't just use it to fund the general fund to pay for whatever you like. So it still has to be road uses, you know, transportation uses. And the city has been basically dedicating a lot of those monies toward
bicycle infrastructure,
things like bicycle infrastructure. Now, politically, they feel some obligation to move forward with those things. Yeah. So if the money isn't available through that source, then they have to start dipping into other sources, which they, of course, would do.
Yeah.
Right. But I don't think the managers would want the sort of the political awkwardness of saying, well, I'm sorry, we can't put in this bicycle infrastructure here because we ran out of money. Yeah. You know, so, but anyway, in the end, the rhetoric was kind of fabulous.
Well,
in a pathetic way.
I guess the original or whatever request was to have some kind of income, something income base for low income. And I remember at the time I thought, wow, I mean, they were proposing, I think back then it was going to be 40. No, am I wrong about that?
I don't remember really, but I actually felt at the time when they talked about means testing for this, that was a lot of that was political posturing.
Yeah.
Now, again, that's the cynic in me speaking.
Probably an election year. Yeah.
Whatever. Right. So, and also, you know, they're often in competition to say, no, I'm the one who cares the most about people of low income. I am.
You know what? This particular issue, and it just $15, it's not a month. It's a year. And like Carlo, I mean, this is, you can park anywhere in the city. I'm assuming you have a car to attach that resident sticker to. I don't care if it's old. It's just, you have to put gas in it. $15 a year is not going to hurt someone.
It's lunch, you know? Yeah. Lunch, I mean,
well, I wouldn't even say it's lunch because I don't spend that on lunch. I'm just saying.
Right. But some people do, yeah. So I thought the economic argument was ludicrous. But and again, I'm not speaking as an elite wealthy person. I'm just saying,
no.
$15 is small change still.
Right, and I do think some of the Mayor Siddiqui said, because everyone said, well, what does this mean, Seth? You have to bring in. She said, no, it can be simple box thing where do you get SNAP benefits? Do you get Mass Health? To me, yeah, that's good. Okay, if you get Mass, so maybe that would help. At least it's not. You know, and you know, with the whole thing, I mean, over 65, anyone that drives a car, you should pay. You know, if it's a hardship, then you go under. You're joking.
I'm taking the discount. Sorry. I'm just doing it. I'm totally in the mindset now that I've reached the point now, if there's any benefits to be had, I'm taking them.
I agree with that. I do agree with that. But I do remember it does say, if you want to make a voluntary thing, it does say that with the
city. They did that because Tim Toomey insisted that. So they put it on there. And I think Tim Toomey asked about that last night. And they said that how many people have responded to that? And and David Kale said it's de minimis.
Yeah, I think did we do that years ago? Because I've been over 65 for many years, and I just seem to remember that always coming in with that.
Yeah, I think if people want to be charitable, they can choose their charity in any way they want. I think sort of how making it a checkbox on whether or not you should pay the $25 versus $40 on a resident permit sticker. That just doesn't work for me.
To have that permit. I mean, some people bring up Boston, you don't pay at all. But you know what? I don't know what to say about that. I'm just saying, of all the things to argue about, I'm sorry. I just feel like.
I honestly, and again, the cynic in me is speaking here again, but to me, it was the first act of the 2021 municipal election season.
Yeah, I think they were angry that there was no reference to it at all, because that was the original order.
You know, I think it depends on the councillor.
But I just feel like.
There are a couple of councillors, I think possibly Patty Nolan, Sabrina Wheeler, and Zondervan. I would say, who seem perpetually peeved at the non-response of city manager.
Right, so I, this issue. Those actually were the ones that voted to do it. It was a five.
Right, but rhetorically speaking, they kind of went on about this, you know, and Patty Nolan did vote against the increase in the end, as it turns out.
He did.
Yes, yeah, yeah. Well, I had actually
5-4 vote. So who were the four that voted? Right, Toomey against it too.
Voted against it. The ones who voted for it were Simmons, Carlone, Sabrina Wheeler, and Zondervan.
Yeah, okay.
Everybody else voted against it.
Well, it would be consistent with, especially with Zondervan and Sabrina Wheeler, because they would like to see no cars.
Right. I am going to sort of take a jab here, though. I mean, because I know that there's, you know, there are some people, I remember when Minka was around, you know, she said, well, maybe it should be a few $100s, you know, and, you know, I always hear the rhetoric about somehow this is public property, and as if to say, you as a resident, how dare you use public property and not put like $1,000 into the coffers? You know, I said, well, come on, you know, it's our city too. It's our streets.
Minka? Who's Minka?
Minka, when Van Busicken was on the council, she was an advocate for big increases in it. So there was one person, Christopher Schmidt, got up to the microphone and literally said, you know, suggested that it should be $1,000 a year.
Not right now, he said.
Eventually. No, not right now, but yeah, we'll step it up until we get it up to $1,000 a year.
Cars and never use them.
Right. So I like to refer to him as the Minister of Propaganda for the Better Cambridge Group. So I hope that's not the position of the ABC. Are they endorsing $1,000 per year resident stickers? If so, please, I'd like to see the press release.
Yeah. Well, so he did say in the future. Anyway, we have about a minute, less than a minute left before our break. But so that was a really interesting discussion, we'll get to the voting. The campaign contribution.
Think we should very, very much talk a little bit about that.
Also tear gas. I really was confused by all the different ramifications. I didn't read all the. I don't get it. So can we do that too? Maybe.
Yes, absolutely true. Just last little momentary thing. There was a big expenditure to help support the outdoor heaters, the propane heaters. So I think Patty Nolan somehow did raise the issue of greenhouse gases, and I said, come on, set it aside for now, will you please?
Okay. Yeah. All right. So we're going to see you in a few minutes.